Tonight it is my delight to welcome back to Many Rivers Books and Tea both of our speakers, who have both presented here, I think, numerous times previously in both cases. Anne Scott is the author of three books, including Women, Wisdom, and Dreams, which I believe is right over here, if I'm not mistaken. And she met her Sufi teacher in 1990 and is the founder of Dream Weather Foundation. And Myosho Virginia Matthews is a Rinzai lay ordained nun in the Zen lineage of Joshu Sasaki Roshi, her teacher since 1973, who we were just establishing is hopefully about to turn 105 by Western reckoning. I guess it would be 106 by Japanese reckoning. Ginny is featured in this book, The Unknown She, a chapter devoted to her life and work. We are so happy to have you back here on the occasion of International Women's Day, and are looking forward to hearing about women in transition. Thank you so much.
I just wanted to give a little background. Every year, Amba, if you know Amba, when I come in for tea, he says, "It's time for you to talk, Ginny." And I think I've said what I need to say, you know. But she was saying we have some openings in March, and that's fine. Come on. And my dear friend Laura's birthday is on International Women's Day, so always it lights up for me. And I said, well, you know, I'll take that date. I'll take International Women's Day, and we'll talk about, I'll invite Anne to come and talk about what we have been doing for the last 2 years at a day shelter called The Living Room. And also, because it is International Women's Day, we also want to expand that to look at Anne's experience at international women's conferences and some of my research and knowledge of what's happening with other women in transition in India through some of the projects there. So that's kind of our overview. And I thought Anne should tell you about how she got involved at the Living Room, and then I came on board a little bit later.
So I think about 3 years ago, I was holding an annual benefit for the nonprofit that I founded, Dream Weather, and it was an unusual time, and I just spoke about the history of what I do and what the nonprofit does, and in the audience or in the benefit was one person who's sitting here today, this evening, and so I was trying to explain about this work with women because it's quite different. It's not like your usual social work, or it's really quite different. And so I was explaining about how this work touches women at an extremely deep level and causes a kind of a real healing of those places which we've forgotten about over centuries and in our culture, and how this is so key to not just individual transformation but social and global transformation. But I was speaking about it, and it's taken many years to learn how to articulate about this very deep and somewhat mysterious work. And mysterious because it's not so common in our culture. And so afterwards, Nancy came up to me, and I'm not quite sure what happened, but I think she said something like, "How does this work? How would this help? How would this help someone?" And somehow she mentioned that she was involved with the Living Room, and the women who are homeless. It's a daytime shelter, and I said, "Well, this would be very, very effective for those women." And so I don't remember the details, Nancy, but somehow she connected me to the right person and introduced me to her and the program director there, and I explained about the work, and it took a while because it was a different language almost from the usual programs that they have. But the perseverance really paid off because we started this program and it's just grown and deepened, and it's been about 2.5 years now, and we have groups of women, sometimes 6, sometimes 14, and they come by bus, they come walking, they come often just for that class. And so, and I can show you how we portray it as finding strength in the quiet. And it's been incredible gift for both of us. And then I did this on my own for a while, and then Jenny joined me. And I would just like to say the names of some of the women, because it'll make it a little more real for you, not their last names, but these women have taught me so much about how women are, who we are, and what happens when everything is taken, and what's revealed, and how by coming together, by sharing, by sitting in silent meditation, by making a space for that deep, deep place within every woman, how that magnifies and really heals women. You know, it heals something very deep within them. But also they share. And in their sharing is tremendous wisdom. So I'm going to just remember some names. Maybe Jenny has some, but this is really in honor of them.
Mm-hmm.
There's Isabel, there's Susan, Sunny, Linda, Hebe, Gabriella, Christina, Sunny.
Could you try and speak a little bit?
Yes, I will.
This has always been Anne's.
Yes.
Sometimes the women there are saying.
Sometimes.
Wolf. Sherry.
And Sherry.
Diana,
and many, many more. We've probably seen 100 women, mm-hmm. at least.
More.
Hundreds. And they come for, they're generally newly homeless, and they come for anywhere from 1 or 2 times, but more typically they'll come for 2 or 3 months. Regularly or semi-regularly, until they find housing, and sometimes they find housing and they still come to the group because they know that there's some key for them, and so it's been a tremendous gift for both of us, and it turns out, thanks to Nancy, that this has been an experiment to show that this spiritually based work is absolutely effective at this ground level. Yes.
We titled this Women in Transition because it was one of the women, Wolf, who woke us up to, she said, I hate the word homeless. First of all, it's kind of a sense of permanence or static, and that's not the case. All these women are in transition. They're have lost a home and maybe are in a shelter, or they're waiting for housing or waiting to go back. We had a wonderful woman who kept saying, I'm going back to my home in Oregon, but I really love this group. I hope you're going to still be here till I have to step on the bus. And she was there today, mm-hmm. and she was leaving that day.
I know.
In a couple of hours, she was leaving after our meeting. And I found myself saying, well, I'm a woman in transition. I had my last child after 28 years of child raising and just left home, and I was going through a difficult period, and I went, well, yes, we're often in that place of transition, and these women, it's right in their face, it's huge, and for many of us, maybe it's not quite as dramatic, but I certainly felt so in relationship with these women. I want to add why I joined Anne. My teacher had given me a mandate to work with women, particularly in the Zen tradition, and which I do. But I also felt like there's not everyone is attracted to Zen, and certainly not everyone's attracted to Rinzai Zen, which is a particular kind of Zen, and that perhaps my I could expand my vision into seeing what I can bring to women outside of the Zen tradition. And this seemed a great opportunity to join Anne in being with the women in circles. So what we do is we just create a circle, and we've been given the Sunday school room in the church. And that's why Mary and Kuan Yin are here, because there's this beautiful statue of, I think it's Mary, but she also looks like Kuan Yin. And we often bring her up to join us. And I thought I had my green heart, but I didn't. And we usually bring an object that we pass around, a shell, or sometimes we pass her around when we've forgotten to bring something. And people just share, and the idea is that, like in, if you know about the talking stick, that you just listen deeply and just honor whatever comes out and not try to step in or talk. And the women, it's been beautiful. Some women don't say very much, or they just pass it on. Some women are kind of overcome with emotion, and that's okay, and then they pass it on. And then we always do a meditation. And because many of these women are in difficult physical circumstances, whether they are detoxing or just haven't slept all night because it's been too noisy at the shelter, we understand that sitting for a long period of time is not going to be helpful. And for many of them, surprisingly, not as many as I thought, had never done meditation. Many people have. Many of the women there have had done meditation. So we do a very simple meditation where we just Anne has one, she leaves. We go back and forth leading them through a meditation, and we just sit for 5 minutes. And I think in the beginning there was a sense of a little agitation that would disturb. And we always tell them if they feel that they can't sit even for 5 minutes, they can get up and walk around. It's okay. Everything's okay in the circle. Everything is okay. There are no hard and fast rules. Mm-hmm. So I want to share Tiffany. Can I share Tiffany? That was when the days we only had three people. So it was a little hard to hold the circle. The more people there is, if you've had that experience, you hold the circle. A very agitated, a very angry African-American woman. Now, one of the great benefits we have is Celeste, who runs the program. She will direct people in. She'll say, you need to go. And so somehow she got Tiffany in there, and she was, she just didn't want to be there, and she was fidgeting, and she was... kept saying, what is this meditation? Is it voodoo, or she was really resistant. And we were just saying, well, if it doesn't work for you, we can go and leave. So we planted our feet and we closed our eyes. And this woman went into the deepest meditation state that I have ever experienced with anyone, instantly. And she was there for 5 minutes. And then when she came out, she was like transformed. Mm. She was just so lit up. And she said, oh my gosh, I was really here, I love the way she put it, I really came here to diss you white ladies. I didn't think you had anything to show me. But what was that that I just experienced? Mm-hmm. And she had been trying to get off of alcohol, and she was having a hard time. And she said that morning in the shelter, for the first time, she had prayed for help. And Ann said, well, I guess you got your answer. Mm-hmm. And it was an amazing experience. And what I've seen, not just Tiffany, I've seen these women just drop into these deep states like that. And I notice that the circle is getting stronger. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You notice that too? You know, when we first started, it was maybe a little agitated, but week after week, mm-hmm. that circle gets stronger and stronger and deeper and deeper. And it's not a quiet play, but I love finding strength in the quiet because the kids are playing out in the yard, right. And there's business, you know, so it's never really quiet. But we create that quiet, and they are so hungry for it, and it's so nurturing, and we try to remind them that, you know, they can, this is available to them, even in their difficult circumstances of being in a dorm with maybe, how many are in Sam Jones in a room?
100. Oh.
Yeah. In
20
a,
to 30.
20. But yeah, so not quiet.
Can be 100.
Too. Not quiet. And some of these women will get up at 4 in the morning and go into the bathroom to meditate. Or just find, you know, because they know. It's, and you see that something we take for granted is so precious for them. So it always reminds us not to take this for granted, not to take the opportunity to go into nature or the opportunity to close the door and be in a room by yourself and be quiet. They're great, great teachers, these women. We've learned so much from them. It's a beautiful exchange, it feels like. Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to read some of the things that have really touched me. I'll be brief about them, but sometimes we ask, when in the beginning, what would you like? What would you like out of this circle? You know, is there something in particular that would help you right now? And more often than not, this is what we hear. I want to have peace in my heart. This is the only place I feel peace. I want a physical home, but I also want an inner home. I want to know peace. I need this peace. I've been only coming here for 1 week. I have accepted my homelessness. It has taught me so much. I thought I was grateful and felt blessings each day, but I hadn't been homeless. I know this sounds crazy, but I have learned to be grateful in these circumstances. There's just many, there's women from all cultures, you know, there's women from Eritrea, there's women from Native American women, women from South America, Eastern Europe, just many different cultures. This one woman, see, when we meet, you never know what the need is. And we can't come in knowing anything, but we make this empty space. And so one woman who was a Native American, she was in grief and denial about the death of her brother. And she told us that she waits for him each day at 10:30 for the bus, because she did this for many years. And her niece said, "Why are you waiting here?" And she waited for 8 hours one day. "For your uncle," I told her. And she said, "He's not coming back, he's dead." But the niece saw his spirit in the house, and the niece said to go back to the house and she'll feel better. But the woman said she still can't go back yet. But she thanked us today because it is the first time she has not run out at 10:30 for the bus. So
some of the things we do. Anne has brought some tools to also help. We brought these beautiful cards of flowers that each woman takes, and it's so precious to them. They're not usually given a gift,
and the book too.
And the book, yes, we've been through a grant from another benefactor. We've been able to get the books out, and they're very precious. We do sometimes they share dreams. Mm-hmm. It's always different. And twice now we've done this. Anne has brought this wonderful exercise that we did today, of writing. And I think that's though some do journal writing, most don't. And it's a lovely way to kind of open a path to a different way of being. The opening sentence is, once there was a girl. And it is, and then they're willing to share it, which is really beautiful because it's usually very personal. And my favorite one, as I shared today with the women, was this one woman had been coming for weeks and never said anything. You know, when the shell or Mary came passing around, she just handed it over. Mm-hmm. So her share was, once there was a girl who every day for years walked to school passing this cliff, and she knew she wasn't strong enough to climb this cliff, even though she yearned to do it. She really wanted to climb this cliff, but she knew she wasn't strong enough. And then one day, after years, she walked by and she said, "I'm strong enough now." And she climbed the cliff. And that was her, once there was a girl. Mm-hmm. And I love, to me it's a teaching story that I keep very close to me. And I think what we have seen and what the women have seen in each other is such wisdom that everyone carries that. And that sense of touching that place, of being a person of worth, wisdom, power, compassion, is so powerful for them, for us. Not just them, for us. And it's all done in a sense of, it's not a religious tradition, it's not a spiritual tradition, it's just finding that place. And I don't think we've ever had anyone not touch that place. Mm-mm. Which has been pretty extraordinary. Hundreds. Mm.
I think what happens is that, as one woman, I just saw that my notes, one woman was explaining that in America, we don't praise women. And I thought, what an amazing insight. And I think what happens is that it's very simple, but we simply honor women, and we honor that they are sacred. It's very, very simple. But that may never have happened even once in these women's lifetime. And so when someone honors that place, it steps forward. They can touch it. And this is not just here, because of the work at the Living Room, I was invited to Baton Rouge to work with a women at the shelter there. And it was the principles and the experience that we gained here, I took there, and it was, because it was compressed and because I was only going to be there for 2 hours, it was like the essence of everything that we've learned here. And again, the women came in extremely angry and extremely shut down emotionally due to what's so common as trauma, some trauma in their lives. And this leads in, Jenny, to the international, because I sat with this group of women, and for the first time, I thought, oh no, I am not going to reach them. Because there was such a deep wounding. And so I just sat there for a minute, scrambling inside. What am I going to talk about? What can I say? And then it came to me to speak about my experience of going to the international women's conferences. And so I just started telling stories about conferences. I went to one in India, and one in Switzerland, and one in Italy. And each time there were women from every tradition, every 45 countries in Switzerland. And they speak from Israel, from Palestine, from Pakistan, and India, and Maori, and Tibetan, and Afghanistan, and Iraq. And these are women who have undergone tremendous suffering, and they just share their stories, and something incredibly powerful happens in that sharing. And so I started telling some of these stories, and I said, what you're going through is not, it's not you, it's not your burden. This transformation, this suffering is going on all over the world, and it's not pointless, it's not meaningless. And somehow the stories that I told, the women, you could literally see their arms unfolded, their legs unfolded, and their faces softened. And it was, I realized what happened was that the sense of individual shame is so overwhelming that they now were part of the world. And that was the opening. And then they could, in the next hour when we meditated, then something extraordinary happened. And we had 10-minute meditation because, again, they went into silence. And most of them had never meditated before. And then I asked them to be aware if a word or an image comes to them during this experience of silence. And if so, then to write it down on this card afterwards. So we went into meditation, and after the meditation, I was going to gently say, so would you mind reading, or would you mind sharing? It exploded. There was no waiting. There was no talking stick. It was... The women wanted to share. I heard this word, peace. What does that mean? How could that come from inside me? Or someone said, I saw light. What is that? And they were really in wonder. They were truly in wonder. And then everyone started sharing and helping each other, reminding each other, that's who you are. And there was incredible joy, and that is exactly what happened at these conferences. Out of all that suffering and the sharing, there were no solutions, there were no agendas to now move forward with. There was this just spontaneous joy and love that came out of these deep sharings, these connections. So I did that again, and there's a power just knowing that we're part of something global. And the first time I went to the living room, the woman who's the program director, it was very noisy in the room. There were 40 or 50 women, and they're all talking, and she kind of shoves me in the, she says, go ahead, talk about what you do. Oh, this is not going to work. no one's even looking at me. And then I thought, okay, I had 10 minutes, and I just spoke the truth. I said, I've been to these world conferences. I know that women are sacred. I know there's suffering all over the world. I know that you too are suffering, but that you also have this wisdom and sacredness inside you. And the room got totally still, total silence. And then I was able to share, and then with the women trust, because I guess they're just accepted, and they're honored. It's very fundamental. So I don't know if you want to say anything, Jenny, about your experience with Maher.
Well, one thing I do sometimes share with the women is how my whole life I've been hungry to sit in circle with women. That our culture has broken those opportunities or those places of coming together in stillness or sacredness. I mean, I enjoy my book clubs and you know, this, but I was hungry for a deeper connection with women, and we call it sitting in circle. And I came across a woman who woke up to her need to find the feminine after being kind of battered by a patriarchal Christian a background when she went to visit a torture museum in Germany. And they have all these terrible devices for torture. And she realized, going to the museum, that 90% of those machines were used on women. And they would tell you this machine was used because this woman had sexually aroused her husband, you know, or this, or whatever. But the one that got me was that it was forbidden for more than two women to come together. If three women were found to come together, you could be tortured. And I thought, ah, no wonder I have this hunger. You know, our culture has demonized that at some point. And so we talk about, with the women, not only is it a great opportunity to sit in circle, but that it's a healing. And that our little circle radiates out beyond this time and place. And I've been particularly attracted to the work of women helping women in India. And again, they're working with women in transition, women who are dealing with mental illness and have been thrown out of their homes, women who've been abused by their husbands or been threatened to be killed by, so they could get a new dowry. I mean, they're pretty extreme cases. And two organizations, one called Banyan, which I suggest you can find on the internet, was started by two young women, 22 years old, seeing a homeless, clearly mentally disturbed women in front of their college and wanting to help and trying to get her to some agency or something to help her, and realized there was nobody would take her. And they said, well, I guess we're going to have to do it. And with help, they started the Banyan. And Sister Lucy, who was at a conference with you, also was a Christian nun, but Indian-born in India, who the suffering of the women who are being threatened or literally killed by their husbands for the dowry came into her personal knowledge, and she wasn't able to save this woman. This woman was murdered. And she vowed to do what she could do to start a shelter for those women. It took her 8 years. And what I really appreciate is that it's the same premise that women have this sacred place in them, and it needs to, and that's where they're going to get their strength. And in there, it's an interfaith group. It's probably one of the very few places in India where there's all the castes sit down to eat together. There's no separation of castes. Hindu, Muslim, Christian, all are together. It's interfaith. And she insists she will not receive any money from groups that insist that they proselytize for their faith. And she's turned down millions and millions of dollars, but she refuses to proselytize because she said every woman has to find her way back to the divine. It's her journey, and nobody and that can do that for her. And so she honors that interfaith, and gives them time to find. There's 3 meditation periods every day in their schedule, and morning, noon for the women after the children have gone to school, and then again in the evening. And then what particularly I'm fond of as a dancer, all the children do Indian dance as a way to develop their physical, mental, and emotional capabilities. And they perform all over or different places in India. They've even gone as far as England. Her story, I recommend this book, which you can order from Many Rivers, called Women, Healing Women. It's a wonderful story, and the story of the obstacles that she has overcome, like trying to get 30 orphaned children to England to perform. You know, the passports and the visas and it's an amazing story. It's very inspiring. And I want to share that story about many of the women who come to, not many, but quite a few women who come to the living room are suffering from PTSD, mostly because they've been soldiers. We forget that it's not just men who went over to Iraq and Afghanistan. There are many women who are suffering from PTSD. And there was a beautiful woman, and it reminded me, and after meditation, we shared, I particularly have affinity for trees, and we talk about how sometimes just sitting with a tree, if you're at a homeless shelter and it's noisy, I said, well, maybe you could go outside and find a tree, because trees are so strong and there's beautiful energy. So we were talking, I think we were sharing about trees, and she said, it reminded her that one of her favorite times was when she was living in a town in Florida where they had, she didn't know the names of the trees, but they're kind of like banyan trees. She did this.
They're like this.
And she said, I used to love to sit under them and feel that beautiful sense of strength and protection. And she said, and that is why I want to heal, so that I can offer to others what that tree offered to me.
And that's something that we see often, that underneath everything is this natural sense of service that I find so moving, and I thought that in such extreme circumstances there would be a kind of greater focus on me, you know, and the needs of survival and on the individual, and of course that's there, but at the same time, there's also this deep desire to serve and to help each other. And so, the words came to me that there is a vast, undiscovered landscape of women. And I think we don't really know. When she said, in America we don't praise women, because of the cultural overlay and because of the centuries of the denial of the feminine. We have lost and forgotten so much, and so these women recognize that, and sometimes they will say, I remember there's one beautiful woman from Haiti, and she said, my grandmother was wise, and my mother was wise, but I am lost. I want to have wisdom. And I heard this again from a Brazilian woman. My grandmother was wise, my mother was wise. Why am I so weak? And yet she is someone who started coming. This was in a different shelter. And after about three sessions, she started dreaming. And she hadn't remembered her dreams in a couple of years. And in her dream, she saw Krishna, Christ. It was both Krishna and Christ, because she was both Christian and also had a deep leaning towards Hindu or the Indian cultural spiritual way. And so she saw this being, and he was filled with compassion and gentleness. And he said to her, don't worry, you will soon get out, meaning the shelter, but you have to follow certain steps. And she woke up. And she kind of dismissed the dream, but also knew it was important. And then we talked about it, and she realized that the steps that she had to take, it was really practical. She had to have discipline. She had to do the homework that the case managers gave her. She had to pay back a little boombox that she borrowed and someone else stole, but it was her responsibility. Little things like that. And it was true. She got out in about a month because she started realizing this discipline. So this wisdom is there, and she's the one that said, I have no wisdom. So it's just creating a container. I think the container is something that's missing in everywhere. And that container allows for this healing to take place. And one day, I knew that sometimes in some of those shelters, the women come in and they say immediately, what is this? You know, there's no soft, let's get to know each other. What is this? Why are we sitting together? And so I was in meditation that morning before I went, and I thought, what am I going to say? I'm bringing this understanding of the feminine. This is at another shelter where mm-hmm. Ginny is starting to work. Mm-hmm. And the image came to me of a tortilla. Mm-hmm. So I thought about it, and then I realized that the tortilla was the perfect way for me to express the meaning of a feminine container. So I said, think of all the things that you put in your burrito, you know, the beans and the rice and the guacamole and everything. Well, if there's no tortilla, and they all understood. And then throughout that session, they would say, oh, there's the tortilla. You know, they would recognize what is the feminine. So it's just something so simple, but bringing back this mm-hmm. essential quality of life that without it, nothing holds together. So.
So I think we have time for questions, if there's anything you want to know about.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me like this container is needed by humans.
Yes.
Not just by women.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm wondering why I make that distinction.
The distinction.
Why concentrate?
Oh, why
on
do
one
we?
Gender over another? It's really a
why
human.
Why do we wait?
Concentrate or focus on one gender over another, because ultimately mm-hmm. we're all in the same boat.
Absolutely.
Needing this There's this container and needing to see the light within and so on and so forth.
That is the sacred feminine. That is the...
That
is the feminine quality, which is in everyone. It's not gender-based, but I can only speak for myself. 20 years ago, I had a dream that, and it really was the beginning of my work with women. I knew that that's where I was going to focus. Sometimes there's men in audiences, but my understanding was that I was to work with women, and there was a need there that I had one little piece that could respond to me. But
and I'll share why my teacher, who taught in the United States for 50 years, or taught in the West for 50 years, mm-hmm. and for the first time worked with both men and women, and found that the tools that worked for men did not necessarily work for women. And he found that women had very little confidence in their own truth, and that men had an easier time of standing in their power or their truth, however you want to think of it, and that women, and I've seen that in my practice with the co-ed practice. And the other thing, I love, one time I was giving a talk, and this woman whose father was an Episcopal priest said, well, in his 60 years of ministry, he said, I think religion was developed for men. I thought that was an interesting. I said, "Whoa!"
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, what the Roshi said is that the qualities of love, not of devotion, of surrender, of selfless service, he found over and over again that it mostly was easier for women to realize that. Men had a harder time. Not that they didn't do it eventually, they didn't learn that eventually, but he saw that it was more available for women, for their makeup. But what he says is, I mean, his whole and most spiritual teachings is that the oneness, it is the one, but it comes through in this male or yin-yang, male-female. And they're equally powerful forces. And when they are equally powerful and recognized as such, the world is in balance. But if one or the other becomes dominant, then it seems to throw things off balance. So many, many, many spiritual teachers are talking about this time for the equality of those two forces of the yin and the yang, or the male and the female. So it's not just my Roshi, but
no,
your teacher, Father Thomas Keating, Brother David Stendhal Ross, all these
indigenous
people, they're all urging women to step forth and bring their truth out into the world and create. And I love Sister Lucy emulates, she always sends a male and a female social worker out to talk to the people to show them that equal partnership is possible in a culture where that's very rare. Male and female is not very equal in India, usually in the agrarian villages. So she's trying to model that for them.
Anyone else have a question?
How is that working?
How is it working? It's hard, but it does eventually work. Yeah, there's a lot of resistance to that and to the work Sister Lucy's doing. But once they see the results, they usually embrace these, because these shelters or homes are in different, or they're spreading. It started with one, and I think there are now 28 shelters in different areas. And yes, so it is working, but it takes some persistence.
Yeah.
I think that I just want to commend both of you for your work. I think something that women who are in transition don't get enough of a place to be feeling and not to have an agenda imposed on them. Mm-hmm. To get out of their situation with such an urgency to fix mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. And the problems are so deep that it's not simple. But I think it's interesting, the gender thing. So many of the women, a certain number, come from abusive relationships and abusive pasts. Mm-hmm. And I just, how do you kind of get that untangled so that they're intact enough to have, because it's so important that that there's an ability to reach out again and create a home for their children again mm-hmm. and just to rebuild relationships, the family relationship. And do you see that movement towards that? Or?
I feel that the women have the answers in themselves. Mm-hmm. And for instance, 2 weeks ago we had this brief silent meditation, and then one woman who she's a really extraordinary woman, but she's on the streets again after 3 years of not of being in a home, when she was in the silence, she said, "Oh, I realized where I didn't take care of business." And she knew just who it was. She understood, and someone else had the same thing. So there is this. I just feel that the more that place of knowing is honored and trusted, that we trust it in the group, that the women do find their way. We only know from the ones who tell us, but something happens. It's like, it's like a chain link. And because of the circumstances of their lives or the trauma, that chain breaks. And once somewhere, when they experience the feeling of having that linked again inside, then there's a knowing about what their next step will be. And I do see that. And some come back and tell us that that's happened. So we don't really go into the psychological aspects because that would take forever and that's not our, it's not our qualifications, but we nurture this other part that has a tremendous wisdom. So, does that answer your question somehow?
It does.
I mean, I could
but
say
no,
more.
Hard we to kind of
well, I
the
you know,
consistency
I could share when one woman was who had been severely abused as a child she was in a shelter and her PTSD from that was being triggered because there was a woman who was being very abusive to her big child mm-hmm. and screaming at it, and it was just triggering everything for her. And so she came into the group very agitated, and from that level of triggering. But by the end of the mm-hmm. of just sitting in circle and with meditation, you could tell she reached a deeper, a quieter place, a deeper place, and then she said, "I have to get out of that shelter." You know, that mm-hmm. it's not going to work to stay there and be triggered. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to take this step.
She did.
She did.
Yeah.
So I think she finds how to do that.
I'd like to say that the community I live in supports the living room, mm-hmm. and I myself support them financially. Mm-hmm. And some of the residents where I live go down and cook meals for people in the living room.
Mm-hmm.
And they do need financial support desperately these days.
They do.
So
the director is
a good thing to do.
Yes, it's a wonderful program.
It is.
And yes, their director just got her hours cut because they didn't have enough money. And we're hearing that other shelters, really wonderful people are being let go who are really holding a space, and but there's no money. So we do urge people who can support.
Hi, I live in Calistoga, but when I come over to Santa Rosa, I usually have a bag of things for the thrift shop there. So I'd like people to know that thrift shop that's on the corner is the Cherry in Mendocino.
Yes, Heavenly Treasures.
Heavenly Treasures.
Right. And so that thrift shop helps support it.
Mm-hmm.
And when the women are at, it's only a day shelter, if they do some work at the shelter, then they get chips, I believe, and then they can go to the thrift shop and get, so there's a whole sense of that they are contributing to.
Right.
Yes.
And so if you're doing any spring cleaning,
But it's a model of women helping and healing women at that place. They pitch in, they work together.
And they also need, they have a whole list if you go in and ask that they need travel soaps and all the things, the stationery and bus tickets.
I remember when women came in early on in my experience, you know, I'd only been there a couple times, I think it was Diana, and she came in and she was glowing. She said, "New socks." She was so happy, you know. And I thought, you know, that made her so happy. And I now remember when I can to bring new socks to the living room when I can remember to pick them up.
But I would like to just, we probably have to close, but I'd just like to bring in how one of the things that keeps coming up at these group meetings is the women's understanding of how we're connected to each other. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like we're speaking about something over there, but actually the title of this, Women in Transition, has to do with everyone, every woman, and that we are all part of this great transition. And I just wanted to bring that forward. And I'll just read this one quote, because it's like this interconnectedness or this oneness is being revealed just through this suffering. And so this was a few weeks ago. One woman who I mentioned to you began to weep in the silence. "I'm 56 and realized in the silence where I've not taken care of business. That's why I'm on the streets again." And the woman next to her said, we started sharing afterwards, and she said, at first the crying was difficult to bear for her, but then she said, "I realize we're all interconnected." She said, "The tears are the hurting factor that raises us to be who we are meant to be. The tears are a cleansing of the spirit." And then another one after the silent meditation, I said, "Once there was a tree," instead of "once there was a girl." Mm-hmm. And this is what she wrote. And she said, "I don't know what this means, but this is what I wrote."
Mm-hmm.
"Once there was a tree on the top of a mountain with a view of the ocean and what seemed like the ends of the earth. Unlimited vision which allowed it to see all things as they really were and not how each object or person imagined itself to be. Because of this view, the tree was able to love and envision all things separate, individual, and yet connect to each other."
Yeah.
So we are all in transition. I mean, everyone. So, any more questions?
I feel really moved to by what you're doing, and feel really appreciative that you can share that with us tonight,
mm-hmm.
and then make reference to that divine guidance that cuts through. Not to say that medical services and psychological services mm-hmm. aren't necessary, but that there's something else that cuts like a diamond
mm-hmm.
and guides. Feel that in that presence there, and that guidance there, in you going there and doing these circles.
I kind of just had a question, you know, after listening to this. I'm probably not the only one who feels inspired and knows that, you know, there is suffering in this community, and if you have suggestions of how women who are working part time or semi-retired might, you know, from your vantage point of seeing what organizations are accepting voluntary help for mm-hmm. women like you described.
And I do want to add that I think it's essential for the person who wants to have a really strong touch in touch with their meditation practice, or with that silence, or with that stillness, because it does take a lot of strength mm-hmm. to hold that circle. And Anne and I have been talking about how do we, mm-hmm. you know, we're just two people, and there's much need, and there is some hope that maybe we could start training people, and that will, over and over again, the quality is that the people who offer this have to be grounded in that place and in their meditation practice or stillness practice or whatever.
But I'm just wondering, in answer to that question, mm-hmm. there may be other
yes.
ways
yes.
to serve. You're doing a unique offering, and there may be other needs
right.
that women
mm-hmm.
could offer
right.
women in need, and what way could we offer our services that doesn't look anything like what you're doing,
right. mm-hmm.
but would be helpful?
I thought Nancy can. I would say one thing is that just from the few organizations I've worked with, I could certainly give some ideas to you, but Nancy probably has something.
Well, I think I've been a regular volunteer and supporter of the Living Room over the years, and they always welcome volunteers to help with their food preparation. They serve breakfast and lunch, and that's an ongoing, very active group, and I think it's not only you're providing something very useful, but it's also you're part of something, of a group of very caring women that is nurturing
mm-hmm.
in
yeah.
that part of doing.
And I have some cards somewhere, but you could call, and I could connect you to some people, both here and the Mary Isaac Center in Catalina. I'd be happy to do that. Anyone has questions? Yeah. Well, thank you. Really.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And then, on behalf of Many Rivers, may I be the first to offer praise to our two speakers tonight for this wonderful sharing. I think it's the most heart-touching presentation that either both of you have done here, and that's saying a lot. So thank you very much. Thank all the people in conversation in the audience as well, and those of you who have listened and supported by your presence this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Very much appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you.
And then finally, we have a donation bowl over on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to it. Half of that goes to support the work of our speakers. Half of that we retain to maintain this space. And do you guys have any other contact information that you want to share?
Where's that box that I have my books in?
I
also have a few flyers for my Zen meditation group for women and for my Pilates class.
Which is an excellent class, I can testify.
Only because if you want to be of service in the world, you need to stay strong physically into your wisdom years, and Pilates is the way to do it.